Hey guys, and welcome into the Sports Roundtable from the State News. All your sports stuff all in one place, every week, every time. We love to do it. I'm here right now with Thomas Cobb. Welcome into the show. It's great to see you again, as always.
Hello, hello.
You just got back from North Carolina.
Yes, sir.
Right?
Yes,
that
sir.
Was a great time.
North Carolina. We got the full stay.
Yeah.
Thursday through Sunday.
How was that?
It was once-in-a-lifetime experience. My first time, really. First time covering March Madness, so getting to do that. It's what you grow up watching as a kid.
Yeah. I saw the photos. They were great.
I grew up watching Michigan State basketball and March Madness, so it was just kind of
surreal first full circle moment. I love that. I love that.
Incredible experience, very surreal. And I'm sure I speak for the two other people that I went with, as well as our women's basketball writer, who was about an hour and a half away in Columbia, South Carolina, for the
women's tournament. Basketball tournament. Yeah, that's a good time. It is a good time, unless, well, obviously you're Michigan State and you go home early. That's basically the gist of today's show, is that we are recapping the Michigan State men's basketball season, the whole season. It's going to be great. So first things first, let's address the high expectations that MSU had entering the season. Right, they had a lot of veteran and freshman talent. A lot of people excited for Xavier Booker, right? And then they finished at 20-15. So I guess people were expecting to see something more. They didn't get it. And I guess what's your take, or what's your story as far as like where MSU, what happened?
What happened is it's a variety of things. I think there were some miscalculations on the part of the coaching staff. I think that there were some unfortunate, extenuating circumstances that happened throughout the season and even before the season started. And I think that, they were rated number 4 nationally in the AP to begin the year. You're playing on your home court to James Madison, ranked number 4, and you lose opening night. People, I think, had a skewed view, in large part because that number 4 ranking was based around a lot of things, and a lot of things that didn't end up happening. It was based around MSU's freshman class really being, one of the best freshman classes in the country, as they were coming in. This was a top 5 recruiting class wherever you looked. And if you just kind of look from guy to guy, one of them was a redshirt. I mean, there was a 4-star recruit that was a redshirt. There was a 5-star recruit that was nowhere near where the coaching staff thought he was going to be coming in, and he didn't end up getting meaningful minutes until late February, March. And the other two guys, while one of them got shot, and in January,
right,
over Christmas
Fierce,
break,
right?
Yep, and then the other one was a phenomenal athlete, and he's just not as well-rounded of a player as he needs to be to get to the next level. And that's not saying – that's not anything against him. It's just – it's the truth of the matter. He was not supposed to be the – Cohen Carr was not supposed to be the main contributor of the freshman class. And that's just the way it worked out. Some of it was an extenuating circumstances. Some of it was a miscalculation on the coaching staff. I think that Tom Izzo and his staff really regret not going out and getting a transfer center. I think that they thought that they had a group in Jackson Kohler, Carson Cooper, Xavier Booker, and Monty Sissoko – to kind of, as a committee, do enough work where the guards can take the team places. Because this is a team where the guards, like Thomas said, these three guys, Jaden Akins, Tyson Walker, and A.J. Hogard, were all on magazine covers in the offseason. This was top backcourt in the country coming back. Jaden Akins went nuclear in the tournament the year prior, showed that he can be a two-way NBA kind of guy. And he was inconsistent throughout the year. Tyson Walker was brilliant at the beginning of the year. He averaged 20 points through 10 games. And then for the rest of the year, I think he averaged around 15. He had some injuries. He just wasn't the same player. So I think that to answer the question, to kind of circle back, that number 4 ranking was predicated on a lot of things happening that didn't happen. And those were kind of what I just described.
And, and it's crazy, too, because I hate the feeling like a lot of people say that Tom Izzo, like, isn't trying or, like, doesn't want to, like, getting to the tournament is, like, good enough for him. And it's, like, I think if you're doing anything, like, you know, I mean, he's obviously passionate. Like, why would he still keep doing it unless he, like, wanted to, you know, because I think if you listen to interviews back at the beginning of the year, and well, before the year, I mean, he really thought or had confidence in that this was going to be one of his best teams that he's ever had. And I think that – I think you are right, and it is fair to say that a lot of things didn't end up happening like that they thought would happen. And I think that they thought that Mati Sissoko would turn out to be someone who would do more stuff.
And Carson Cooper would develop more than they thought they would. And Jackson right. Kohler wouldn't have gotten hurt in September and missed the first 2 months of the season. They thought he was going to be – and Izzo's come out and said that they thought he was going to be a significantly more part of things than he ended up being because of that injury. They thought that David Booker was going to be farther along. They thought that, like you said, Sissoko would kind of round into a consistent, like, not great, but a consistent force like he was in the last three games of this season.
So then, as someone who's been around the team for the whole, you know, for the season, like, I guess describe, I want to talk about Booker for a second because, you know, that progress that he made from, like, when we saw him in December to, like, see him in, you know, January, February, March, like, that is crazy. You know, like, that is, like, he actually looked like a guy who can compete out there with, you know, some of the other players. So I guess talk about him. Like, what did you notice?
You know, it is crazy because, I mean, this is a five-star guy we're talking about. I mean, purely based on, honestly, size and potential. Like, he was not necessarily this force in high school when it came to, you know, playing on the court. I think he was the second or third guy on his team in terms of points. He's just a guy that is 6'11", has a beautiful jump shot, and has a 7'6" wingspan. You know, so just when it comes to that, I think he just shot up from being unranked to being a five-star recruit. And then missed to Michigan State, and he comes in. And there was a lot of things that were keeping him off the court. Some of it was mental. Izzo said that he just didn't have the motor early on, and you know, then you can get into, like, what is motor? I guess it...
Like, what is that? What does that mean?
I would describe it as, like... I would describe motor as, like, you know, knowing what it takes sometimes to do certain things, like, internally, and, like, drive, competitiveness, aggressiveness, kind of all play into that. But it's just such a weird dynamic that this, you know, this five-star recruit ended up having this path. And at the end of the North Carolina game, where their season was over this past weekend, he did say, "I'm coming back next year for sure."
Yeah, and
he said,
"I'm
coming back."
And that probably will end up likely being his last year, right? Because if he, imagine think about the progress
that he did
from the beginning of the season to now. Like, I mean, expedite that. Like,
if he can stay healthy, he will be going to the NBA after next season, most likely, because, I mean, you hit it spot on. If you watch him in the tournament in January, if you looked ahead to the future and you saw him playing in the tournament, you'd be like, wow, like, it's like a beautiful sight, because he not just gained the physicalness, he gained 20 pounds over the course of the season, let alone the offseason, where I'm sure he gained some weight and muscle, but he gained so much confidence. And that was the biggest thing for him, was just being on the court. And, you know, I think that Izzo handled him, in hindsight, perfectly, because you put him on the court in December and January when he's not ready physically and mentally, it kills, like, his confidence. It kills all of his spirit, his motivation. And I don't think that they needed him. He wasn't the answer to their problems at that time. The answer to their problems was, you know, the play from their senior guys.
Right, that those are the guys that should be stepping up right now.
And those are the guys that warranted Michigan State that number four ranking, having been to a Sweet 16, having beaten, you know, sort of a nationally respected team like Marquette in the tournament. And you have this three-headed monster at the guard spot that you don't need a game changer at center to win a national title. Like, you have Malik Hall, who ended up being exactly what they hoped he'd be at the end of the season, February and March, but he wasn't that way the whole year. A.J. Hogard was incredibly inconsistent throughout the year. scored 3 points, went 1 for 10 in the North Carolina game. And that was just sort of emblematic of the season. You know, in 40 minutes against North Carolina, Michigan State was everything that they had been all season. You know, a fast, experience-led team, a team sort of just fighting to stay afloat and in the game, and then they were a team who's crumbling for 3, 4, 5 minutes was ultimately enough to just completely bury it.
And, like, obviously they started off with that loss against James Madison. Like, and I don't know if you'll agree with this, but, like, obviously it wasn't, nothing was ever great throughout the whole season. But I want to talk about really, like, do you ever really think that MSU was on the cusp of missing the tournament? Until, like, I'm talking about the narrative of their whole season, right? Like, we're talking about, like, late December through January and February. Do you think that MSU, until the last couple weeks, which were a little rocky, do you think that before that...
I can take you through, like, sort of my whole journey with that throughout the year.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they start off 4-5. They drop their first two Big Ten games to Wisconsin and Nebraska. And so you enter the Christmas break period where normally that's like a down... And they did play some pretty low major teams that they beat up on. But they played Indiana State over the holiday break, which, I mean, talk about a scheduling malpractice. I mean, Tom Izzo, the mid-majors that you schedule in a season are James Madison, Indiana State,
that's
Oakland.
It's
just
all teams that on top of are playing, really, really good mid-majors.
On top of playing Arizona, Duke, Baylor, you name it.
I think, and especially after last year, like the scheduling nightmare that he kind of gave himself.
Well, it's like that every year, but this year was incredible because of the James Madison and the Indiana State particularly. Anyways.
Right.
So Indiana State ended up being huge for their tournament resume. We didn't know it
because they had ended up having an incredible season, finishing 29
and
in the net.
They had lost that game, they might not have made it at the end. So if you keep going through, they kind of found themselves in the middle of Big Ten play. They won, I think 13 out of 17, and they were sort of heading toward this like six. Like if they kept winning at the rate that they were, if they won the games that they should to end the year. And, you know, a game or two in the Big Ten tournament, they would get, like, hopefully a 6 seed. That's what a lot of Michigan State fans were looking at it, saying we could end up getting a 6 seed and then having to play, you know, into a 3 seed in the round of 32 and then two, then one. So that's kind of, like, you know, a decent spot.
Right.
And then they had played 2 home games in a week against Iowa and Ohio State, both games that they were heavily favored in, I think double-digit favors. They lost both.
Yeah. The Ohio State one was tough.
Inexplicable because they were up by double digits in the second half.
Yeah, something like that, and they just completely...
And it was just, like, the most uninspiring, like...
And they had a lot of offensive trouble, right? And then, like, I know because, like, that's one of the knocks on Booker, right, is that, like, he started that game, and that I think that was the Booker controversy.
He started that game, and he played... Well,
17 played well for 17 minutes, and then he didn't play very
much longer. And
then
the coaching staff rode Sissoko down the last 8 minutes of the game.
Right, and it's, I think that was the troubling decision because, and we're not I'm not trying to beat a dead horse or say, you know, because we've already discussed this at length, but you know that was hard because Booker provides offensive value to the team. Right?
A lot of offense.
And, like, I mean, yes, because his biggest weakness right now at the moment is his defense. Like, that's where he's a liability. However, like, you know, at that point, it was like, at this point, his offensive prowess definitely outweighs his defensive risk, you know? And so that was, I guess, that was the thinking there.
And that's just kind of the you pick your poison if you're Tom Izzo, you know? You don't. Tom Izzo would rather lose a game because they can't hit a shot than lose a game because he's getting beat up on the glass.
Right.
Off, like, someone misses a cutout and you lose the game. Like, he would much rather lose the game because you have a center who can do virtually nothing offensively. And then, so they lose those 2 games. They win the next one against Northwestern. Sorry.
By the way, he is rattling all these off the top of his head. Like, he doesn't have anything in front of him. I'm talking about you. You're just, like, doing this off the top of, like, crazy. I'm just very impressed.
I just got it wrong. So, the two games, and then they go to Purdue, and they lose by 6 at Purdue. You know, it's a very, very promising loss.
Yeah.
Sort of a moral victory, even though there are no moral victories if you're a sports – if you're an athlete or sports fan.
Right, like moral victories are hilarious. Right?
That's just a funny concept. Yeah. But anyways, they sort of showed the effort that they didn't show against Ohio State and Iowa, where it just kind of showed, like, okay, this team, you know, they have what it takes effort-wise. Mm-hmm.
And didn't they play well against Purdue twice?
They did.
Right? Yeah.
And so that was the first time they beat Northwestern on senior night by 4. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then the final game of the year, it's at Indiana. Indiana struggled all season, but it's their senior night. It's going to be a tough game to win. And they held, I think, an 8-point lead in the last 6 minutes of that game. And if they had won that game, you could firmly pencil them in to the tournament.
Absolutely,
Because it's a road win. You know, they didn't have many of those.
Mm-hmm.
And they ended up losing the game in the final seconds.
By one.
Indiana makes a shot. MSU comes down, misses a shot, and then all of a sudden you're sweating going into the Big Ten tournament. Thankfully for Michigan State, they won against Minnesota to open the Big Ten tournament in a game that was pretty much necessary for them to win if they wanted to make March Madness in the grand scheme of things. Because fast forward, the next day they lose to Purdue by 5, another game that they could have won had they, you know, maybe had a little better shooting night or stay out of foul trouble. That was a big part of it. So then that Saturday of championship weekend, Michigan State was firmly in the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And they ended up being firmly in the conversation when all was said and done. But what happened on that Saturday night was, as a lot of these tournaments were wrapping up, you know, a lot of the other conferences have their championships on Saturday night, a lot of really middling teams in these conferences ended up making runs and winning their conference tournament championships.
Like NC State, right? And exactly. like
the Bid Stealers.
Oregon, right?
The Bid Stealers.
Right.
The Bid Stealers. There were, I think, 6 or 7 Bid Stealers.
In hockey, we call them line movers.
Duquesne.
But, yeah.
Oregon. NC State.
Just a bunch of them.
Like, teams that would otherwise have no business making the tournament.
That's crazy.
Make the tournament, and now all of a sudden it's pushing all
these. Is that kind of why MSU, even though they did end up making it in, they were kind of at a 9 seed? Like, it was kind of like, I know some people said it was high.
I don't think it necessarily ended up affecting their seeding.
Okay.
I think it just was making a lot of people nervous because that bubble, they call it the bubble.
It shrinks.
The 10 or 12 teams or so that are in that 8.
And it probably is what forced Indiana State out of the tournament.
It is.
Right.
It is. And unfortunately for Indiana State, they lost their conference tournament to Drake,
right,
who, you know, is a good
team. Stole their bid.
Yeah, is a good team, but they're not better than Indiana State. They didn't have a better year than them.
Right. And now but they had one better game.
And they had one better game, and now they're playing, now they're dancing, and Indiana State's not dancing.
Can I say something really, really quick? This is a hot take, but I think that conference tournaments are so stupid. Like, I hate it's not that hot of a take. It really, because I don't know who else agrees with me.
Because it doesn't affect the seeding, really. The Big Ten Tournament Championship is literally 20 minutes before the selection show.
Right.
The game ends.
They've already determined who's going to be in.
The game ends, and it's like, okay, and celebrate for 20 minutes. Now you go find out what seed you have.
Right.
And so, like, the committee has come out and said that, you know, these games, especially like the championships on the final day, like, they don't really matter.
So the only thing that actually matters is if you weren't going to otherwise, like Michigan, for example, wouldn't have gotten in the tournament. I mean, they didn't, but they needed to win the Big Ten, and they weren't going to. But my point is like, these teams that their only option is to win.
Yes.
Right? That's all that matters.
That's all that matters.
And I think that's lame, because it doesn't your regular season matter more?
But what I was going to say is, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really move the line in terms of seeding, but it can affect the field in the way that, you know, some of these Bid Stealers just rise out of the ashes, and all of a sudden.
I guess it is nice that it gives them a reason to, like, you know. But wouldn't you feel better in a system? And I'm not trying to get, like, all sort of morally, like, how should we change the system or whatever. But wouldn't you feel better in a system where, like, the regular season champion made it and then also the – but I don't know for mid-major – I don't know what you would do for mid-majors because are you funky. Giving more mid-majors more spots?
It is funky how, you know, it's based on – the tournament championship.
It's based on one
five-day,
and it's one game. It's a single elimination.
We got to win three games to get there.
Well, yeah, but you got to win every game,
right?
And if you lose once, bye-bye, see ya.
And that's just
like, do you think it'd be double elimination?
That would be the argument for expanding the NCAA tournament.
Interesting. But a lot of people that want to expand the tournament want to put more of, like, I don't know, like, who did,
you're right.
Like, you know, they want to put Ohio State in, yeah, or something, you know what
absolutely
I mean? Like, that's, absolutely, I think, the problem, is they only care about their own conference.
It is a problem, but
anyway, in Michigan that was
State's,
off track.
No, in Michigan State's defense, they ended up not even being that close to falling out. They were the highest rated 9 seed, so they ended up being 10 spots away from missing the cut.
Do you think that it was fair, like, how the committee graded MSU?
I do. I think that when I was looking at all the Twitter bracketologists and stuff on Selection Sunday, you know, I sort of was basing all my opinions around them, and they all sort of had a similar idea of how things were going to turn out. Michigan State, almost all of them had Michigan State in the play-in game and day in.
Okay.
So I went over to the Breslin that day, like an hour before the show, just kind of get my head straight, you know, write a little bit, do some prep, and you know, everyone's talking about the playing game. Oh, you're going to have a Michigan State, Virginia, Michigan State, St. John's, you know, Tom Izzo, Rick Pitino. That was just sort of the whole narrative. So I go in there, and I'm thinking, okay, like, we're going to Dayton. Like, I had to.
You had, like, probably a whole story right written
I had
out.
I had a little summary lead and stuff going for it for both options. But I went in there and was like, okay, we're Michigan State's. I'm going to be traveling to Dayton and, you know,
yeah,
60
and that,
hours
that,
or and, 36 and, hours. So,
and that would be probably a drive for you then.
Right. And honestly, I'm so glad that
you got to fly.
Oh,
yeah, I bet you are.
But I was sitting in the. They didn't let the media watch with the team this year. Mm. They have in the past. This year, it was just the team and, you know, family and whatnot.
Yeah.
So the media was watching it in a separate room, and they were going down, you know, they're listing off the regions, and there's a couple plans, like, announced a few plans at the 10 spot, and I'm just going to say it wasn't in there. They announced a few teams that I thought were going to be out completely.
Mm.
And so, you know, they announced three regions, and all these teams that I thought were, you know, like Virginia and Colorado State, like, they announced that Virginia and Colorado State play in at the 10. Mm-hmm. I think it was the region before Michigan State's region, and me and sort of all the other writers in the room just kind of were like, you know, like, we didn't outright say it, but we all just kind of, like, we knew that, like, this is not good for Michigan State. Like, they're probably going to miss the tournament based on what we had gathered from the media, like, as a whole, the national media. Based on what we had gathered from them, we had determined that, okay, like, they're out. Like, they're not going to make the tournament. And then they came in as a 9 seed, and we were all just kind of like, oh my gosh! Like,
yeah,
total curveball.
Yeah, watching that Selection Sunday was like very, like, I was like, I texted somebody that covers MSU and that like, I'm like, you know, and I was like, do you think they missed it? Like, as a 25 in the net, do you think they missed it? Like, really? Like, you know? And then they came back for the commercial, and it just ended up being in the final bracket that they talked about, which was, like, you know, kind of a sweat, you know. So
Indiana State ended up being the highest ranked team in the net ever
to not make it.
And it would have been Michigan State. I think MSU was 25.
Right.
And Indiana State was 29.
Right.
Something like that. I think it was 33.
Before it was 33. Yeah. You're absolutely correct.
Yeah.
You're just rattling these off. I don't know how you do this with just off the top of your head. You got brain knowledge just floating. You just remember everything. It's crazy, crazy stuff. So lastly, I want to leave off with just kind of like, what does MSU need to do going forward, you know, into the off season to prepare for next year?
I think that they're in you know, relatively good shape for next year. You have Jeremy Fears coming back. Izzo's repeatedly said that he's a guy that he thinks can lead a team. and can, you know, he's always said that coached or player-led, player-coach teams are so much better than coach-coach teams, and I couldn't agree more. Jeremy Fears is a guy who embodies that. Xavier Booker is going to make a ton of strides, just oozing potential and talent. He's going to be an NBA player. Jaden Akins could come back. I think that, you know, based on talking to him after the North Carolina game, it seems like that's kind of where his head's at. And then so you'll have him back. Jackson Kohler, Carson Cooper, Trey Holloman, Garrick Norman, and then you have a decent freshman class. Pretty good.
Right.
I mean, it's not as good as the last class, but that was a top five class in the country. It's a couple really, really talented guards, big and small. Kurt Tang's more of a shooter, ball handler, and Jace Richardson's more of like a bigger guy. Can really drive it and shoot it. And then a bigger guy, Jesse McCullough, is more of a power forward, 6'8". And I just think that they're all – Izzo's going to like his team going into next year. He's probably going to go get a transfer. He realizes now, I think,
the mistake.
Yes, and it's not that he doesn't like transfers. I mean, he's gotten transfers as early as Draymond Green's senior year in 2012. He went out and got Brandon Wood from, I think it was, somewhere in the MAC. Bryn Forbes in 2016 was a transfer. Aaron Harris, Tyson Walker, and Joey Hauser.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. No, yeah.
He's not afraid to use the transfer portal. It's just he...
And it's probably the culture, that like the actual staff,
He and his staff made a miscalculation, mm-hmm. and I do think that he doesn't necessarily like the landscape of the transfer portal.
Mm-hmm.
But him and his staff made a miscalculation, and he knows that. And I think that at the time when they didn't think that they needed to go get anybody, that was kind of convenient for him to beat up on the transfer portal. You know,
right, right.
And, you know, we don't need anybody. You know,
we're good.
You know, but we're not gonna like. Like, we're loyal to our guys, and then the team just ended up being, you know, insufficient to do what they thought that they were going to be able to do. And I think that their ceiling is higher next year with a new culture. You're sort of moving on to a new era of Michigan State mm-hmm. basketball. Tyson Walker-less, A.J. Hogard-less, Malik Hall-less, possibly Sissoko-less era of Michigan State basketball. So I think that, in all honesty, that's a good thing for them because – while at many times throughout 2-3 years, those guys were able to show that they had the potential to do great things.
Mm-hmm.
They just never got it done. And bottom line, Michigan State, if you're, you know, in that basketball program, you're a talented guard, you got to be able to get it done. And getting it done means Final Fours.
Wow. Crazy. I don't know. I'm excited for MSU basketball. I mean, I think I'm excited for football too, but we'll get there.
Big Ten championships, Final Fours. If you're not doing that at Michigan State,
then what are you doing? What are you doing? So you haven't been on since we brought trivia to the sports roundtable. Mm-hmm. Are you ready? Do you think you are? This one's a women's basketball question.
Hit me.
So okay, let's do it. Okay. So the most points that Caitlin Clark has scored in a game was it against Michigan on February 15th. 2024. She scored 49 points, mm-hmm. okay, that day. That puts her third on the all-time list for most points in a single game, right? Can you name either or both of most the top two players?
In a game?
Most points in a single game.
Liz Canby? No. How many guesses do I get?
I don't know. I'm not giving you the answer yet.
No, like, I'm just going to like rattle them off. Okay.
Yeah. Just go ahead and rattle them off. I can't tell Stewart. You if you're right, though. I just can't.
Oh.
Because I got to tell the answer at the end of the podcast. And you're the first guy on.
Oh, so Liz Canby could be right or wrong.
It could be right or wrong. You would never know. But okay, it's not, well, actually.
I'll give two official guesses.
Okay, two official. There you go. Guesses. That's a good.
I need to think, though.
Yeah, that's fine. We'll just play the Jeopardy theme song. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm just going to go with Taruzi, Diana Taruzi, and Super.
I don't know, actually. I can't tell you. But I will. You will find out right after this. Welcome back to the Sports Roundtable Podcast. This time, we're flipping the script. It's we go from men's basketball to women's basketball, and we have Deshaun Johnson, who covered the women's team for the 2023-24 season.
Yep.
First of all, how was South Carolina? How was that?
Oh, man, the experience was awesome. Like I've just been telling everybody, I mean, that's my first time doing, like, a big travel thing for any type of recovering Army reporting experience. So it was just awesome to go. Obviously, this is my first time in South Carolina as well. So I've seen a lot of different things. And just the setup they had there for March Madness, it's an experience that I've never seen anything like before.
That's crazy. And that's awesome. And I'm really happy that you're back.
Oh, yeah.
And I well, you know, I mean, I guess, like, if I were you, maybe I don't know if I'd want to be back. Like, just keep reliving those 3 days over right, and over and right. over again. So MSU women's basketball, I don't know that we saw this coming. 22-9.
Yep.
Number 4 in the Big Ten.
Yep.
Number 9 seed in the tournament. Lost to North Carolina in the first round. Now, I want to ask something, actually, for someone that's not necessarily as equipped with knowledge about women's basketball.
Uh-huh.
So I'm just going to compare MSU's men's team.
Okay.
20-15, right?
Mm.
So they play more games, I imagine, than the women's team.
Yeah.
And, like, so then they were also 7th in the Big Ten, right? And Michigan State's 4th in the Big Ten at 22-9.
Yeah.
But they're both 9 seeds.
Yeah.
So, like, what, like, I guess give me the why.
So, I mean, the way that I kind of seen it break down for women, for the women's team, I think they get put at the 9 seed just because of the tough losses they had to the teams that were better than them ranking-wise as far as net rankings go when it comes to the picking for the tournament.
But if they lose to a team that's better than them in the net, isn't that a good thing? Like, I mean, I'm not saying losing is good.
Yeah.
But theoretically, it's a better loss than losing to a team that's worse than them.
It definitely is. I think that what the problem when it comes to, though, is that, like, you just, like, I feel like you have to win one of those games when it comes to, like, just, like, playing against teams that are better than you in their rankings. You have to have one of the wins that is kind of, like, you know, like, when I was checking for kind of, like, when I was just looking into bracketology and seeing where they were going to land for this year, you know, obviously, and I know you're kind of big into bracketology, you see the different games that, like, they show that are kind of the big ones, you know. We talked about this on the pod a little bit before of a little bit of skill point rankings when it comes to college basketball and how that ranking goes. So, you know, like, you know, the tough loss to Iowa, to Indiana, to Ohio State, you see that all those teams are better than Michigan State in the net rankings, and that they, even though they were close wins, which give them a little bit of bonus there, they weren't able to get over the hill in any of those games, so I think it ultimately hurts them in the long run.
Interesting. And, yeah, because it seemed like I said, it seemed like they've had a good season.
Yeah,
right?
No, definitely. I mean,
and 9 losses is not bad.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I guess that's my thing is I'm like 9 seed. Like, it seems like they should be playing, like, you know, a little bit higher.
Mm.
But I guess that's – I'm not the expert, but you are. So do you think that the committee judges them fairly?
I want to say that it was – pretty fair. Like, I mean, like, I think the biggest, like, kind of flag that was raised is that Michigan also got a 9 seed when getting into the tournament, and they did not play as well as the Spartans throughout the entire year. But I think another part that kind of hurt the Spartans was the losing streak at the end of the year. They dropped quite a few games. While Michigan, I don't exactly remember how they finished off, but I know they was on the positive end, while you kind of see that Michigan State, although, you know, big ranking in the Big Ten tournament, you know, but you kind of lose a couple games straight, and then the loss in the Big Ten tournament to Nebraska. I think when you factor it all in, it's just like, I mean, like, they definitely took some losses at the end of the year that I would say was a fair ranking for the most part.
So then, I guess as far as the season overall,
yeah,
like, how much of a, like, start with the expectation, and I guess take me through the whole season to, like, where, like, you know, they started off, well, like, how did they start? They start off pretty good?
Yeah, I mean, so just to give you a little bit on the expectations, I mean, I think that coming into the season, you know, you had a lot of new things going on, and I don't want to go too much on a tangent, but obviously head coach Robin Frelick was the biggest thing. But I think the great thing about that signing and, like, the thing that wasn't so discouraging about having a new head coach was just the resume that she had been coming in with. I mean, she, MAC Coach of the Year, multiple tournament or end of the year tournament appearances. Frelick had a lot going on at the time, so I think that, of course, you had a lot to think about, but you start, you know, you start the first couple of games. I think they went on a 4-game winning streak to start the year. You go to the Cherokee Invitational and you lose your first game, but in those first couple of games, you're scoring 80, 90. I think at the very beginning of the year, they were averaging 92 points through 4 or 5 games. So it was clear that there was a big offensive input. It was clear that this team was performing on a different level than they had the year prior in just 4 or 5 games. You hit the middle of the year, and I think this is when the team kind of really realized that there was something going on with this team, that it could be a lot more than anybody kind of expected them to be. I don't exactly remember where they are in the record at this point, but they had only lost 2 or 3 times, and the toughest loss that they had at that point was to Nebraska. That's the Big Ten opener, and I mentioned this on the podcast earlier in the year, too. You know, no disrespect to any of the teams that the Spartans are playing, but it's when you get into Big Ten play, it's when things really start to get a little bit serious. You start to get really to the midst of the season. So they did lose the game there, but after that they go. There was like a little bit of a streakiness for the Spartans. It's a win-loss, 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 win 4 or 5 straight, lose a tough game like one of these Ohio State, Iowa games, win another 4 straight, lose, and then they had that period at the end of the year where they lost quite a few games. But like just to play off the expectations, I think that at first like it was just a little bit of a who knows like at this point. Like, and I mean that for fans, I mean that for the coaching staff and for the players, like, of course, like, you know, you're going to be all bought in and you're going to have to give everything you got, but you don't know what's going to happen this year. But midway through the year, I think everyone has started to get a grasp on this team really had something going for it and they could make a run if they wanted to. I mean, everybody on the roster at this point was talking about it. So the expectations quickly started to rise for the team. And by the time they made it to the postseason, there was kind of like this narrative that they're playing with house money a little bit, if you will, just because, I mean, the low expectations, you know, you didn't expect to be here. You got a lot going on that's going to continue to build the program just with this new coaching staff coming in. And then you get your spot. You get a 9 seed in the tournament. You're a high seed in the Big Ten tournament. That only creates a little bit more attention that you're going to want to bring into Michigan State's program. That adds to your resume and what you can bring in for the oncoming years. So ultimately, I mean, it was a huge expectation lift for sure.
And then, like, what is Robin Frelick doing recruiting-wise?
So I was just looking at this, and I got it up here on my phone here. There's we can talk about this a little bit more, but the one thing that like I think the Spartans really realized from the NC State, or I mean from the North Carolina game, throughout the different game against like teams like Nebraska, is that there's just a little bit of a size disparity going on there. Mm-hmm. There's a great story with Michigan State's basketball team or Michigan State's women's basketball team with Julie Arol and her playing the center position as a point guard this year. I mean, she's played point guard all her life. And yet, she's second.
And she's able to play the 5.
Oh, she's crazy. Playing it incredibly. I mean, she's top 5 in blocks in the Big Ten, number 8 in rebounds. Like, I mean, she's doing an incredible showing. It's just the disparity is not on her. It's the fact that when Julia has to take a break, they don't really have anywhere else to go. So I was just taking a look here right before we started the pod, and there's been a confirmed 4 different signings for the Spartans. And it gets me really excited to see what they potentially could do. So I don't know too many or too much about each of these prospects, but I can give you just a little bit about them. There's 4 different confirmed signings that we already had, and these were announced a couple months ago. But mm-hmm. There's one, and I'm sorry if I mispronounced her name, but I think it's Sotelo Miguez. She's a 6'3" forward, and she's she's a native of Spain. She's currently playing in an overseas league, and I mean, just looking at some of the things that they have about her just on Michigan State's like scouting website that they have up there, she's got some serious game. I mean, she's playing with, you know, we've heard about what overseas basketball can be like. She's playing with a lot of older competition that is a lot more physical, a lot more just, you know, get serious now. So her, seeing that transition would be definitely like a fun new thing for the Michigan State Spartans, especially like when I mentioned that size disparity they have. 2 more forwards coming in, one at, I believe she's 6'1", and another one at 6 foot. Both of the, one of them coming out of Ohio, one of them coming out of Indiana. Like I said, there's still not too much to be known about them now, but they're having pretty good high school seasons, and they're both depth to the size disparity that we keep mentioning. And then Frelick also mentioned, and this is the cool thing, is that 2 of these signees coming out of Ohio, one of them coming out of Toledo, Ohio. Her name is, I believe it is, yeah, Sinai Douglas, and she's a point guard coming out of Toledo, Ohio. And so far, they have a little bit more about details on her on Michigan State's website, but what she's been doing in her senior year has been, like, pretty amazing down there in Toledo, Ohio. I don't know exactly what the competition's looking like, but she's averaging well in the 14, 15 points per game area, and it just seems like she has a lot of, different type of gameplay that the Michigan State Spartans could need at the guard position. You're going to have Dee Dee moving up into a big veteran position, but you're losing a lot of guard play in this upcoming year with losing out on Torrey Osmond and Mo Joyner, a lot of veteran guard play. So you got a little bit there to play with. Four signees that seem that they could bring a lot to Michigan State's roster next year, which is going to be continuing to build a strong but still rebuilding process, as they're still a lot of new faces and then more faces leaving the team as of next year.
And so I guess it's because I know Michigan State, like, almost it's like the men's and women's teams have almost like had a complete like flip. Like, yeah, it's like the opposite narrative, right? Like, yeah, with the men's team, you had a ton of expectation entering the year. A lot of that, you know, was partially because they were hyped with the recruiting class.
Yeah.
And a lot of things didn't pan out the way they wanted them to. And so there was a bit of a rocky road. With the women's team, it was very much like they, like, had lower expectations. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you're going to rebuilding a program, building it with a new coach. You're doing it. You're kind of laying the groundwork for the future. And there we didn't really know what to expect. We just knew that Frelick had a great history.
Yeah.
You know, or resume. Right. You know, she was at Bowling Green. She did great things there, and she built that program pretty good.
Yeah.
And so, like, she comes to MSU, and she kind of there's like hope for the future. And so I think that it's very interesting to see that sort of disparity, or not disparity, but like contrast.
Yeah.
Between the men's and women's teams. And so, like, going forward into the future, like, what do you think the expectations are going to be for next season? Do they have to, like, if they don't make the NCAA tournament, is that going to be, like, a failure? Or, like, how are we going to, like, identify the tangible, like, growth for the team?
I think that's definitely, like, a bit of a funny question because, like, I mean, like, you know, you don't want to take this year and, like, completely blow it out of proportion and, like, say this is the new standard. However, there is a certain level of it to where, like, it should be the standard for this team going forward. Like, you know, Michigan State's women's basketball program, a while ahead, hasn't got the exact exposure that the men's team has gotten. They've had some decent runs in the past decade or so. And, you know, you want to continue to see that coming from a school that prioritizes basketball programs, you know. So, Frelick, obviously, like I said, I mean, a huge resume, multiple tournament appearances, her record at Bowling Green State, 31, I think coming off a 31 win record. It's obviously what she's capable of is amazing. So their expectations that they had coming into this season, it's not going to be anything like that next year. It's definitely going to be like, you know, like, we're expecting a lot out of this program, but I think that it should also just still be remembered that, like I just mentioned, they're still in the midst of a rebuild process. Like, you know, coming into this year, that was kind of the idea, and although that, you know, they show that they could have a great year, there has to be a little bit of remembrance that Mo Joyner, she did just play her last game as a Michigan State Spartan. Torrey Osmond just played her last game as a Michigan State Spartan. And, I mean, they had both been in the program for 4 years apiece. So, you know, like, those are key factors that are being lost. And as a coach, you know, that is just getting there, you definitely have to do things to make sure that you rebuild that in the right way. You don't want to, you know, like I said, two of these prospects are coming out of Ohio, and you don't want it to, you know, as a coach, you don't want it to just be like, you know, like, oh, I'm just bringing in more people from Ohio. It has to be a slow blend. So, you know, like, it's going to be a process for them. But I think, to me, like, the expectations are going to be at least a better record than what we've seen previously to this year. I don't know if 22 wins is going to be the exact, like, the exact goal point, but I do expect to see 16, 17 wins, another, you know, a positive record within the Big Ten Conference. I definitely think that this team is here to stay, at least at a certain record or a level of where they were this year.
That's crazy, and we're looking forward to it because I think it's awesome when you have, like, both the men's and women's program that are, like, really making moves.
Right.
Now moving on to trivia.
Okay.
To sort of have you been on for trivia yet?
I have not.
You have not been on for trivia. You're gonna love trivia.
Okay.
It is great. Okay. Anthony's gonna cue music, and it's gonna be great. Not actually live. It's gonna be in the editing process.
Okay.
I just like to be creative. Anyway, so trivia time.
Okay.
It's actually about women's basketball. So it kind of might be up your boat, sort of thing. And this actually does lead into our next segment where we have Hannah Holy Cross talk about Caitlin Clark.
Okay.
We look forward to that because that is a bonus segment that we did not anticipate having this week.
Okay. Definitely.
Here's the trivia question. Are you ready?
Yes, I am.
The most points that Caitlin Clark has scored in a game was against Michigan on February 15th, 2024.
Yep.
She scored 49.
Right.
That put her third on the all-time list for most points in a single game.
Okay.
Can you name I'll give you this question if you can name either of the top two players.
Okay. So this
you
is
get, actually... Well, you get two official guesses.
Okay,
and
this
I'll tell
is,
you if they're right.
This is actually kind of crazy. Like, I know for a fact that I'll be totally honest. Like, I don't think I know the name, but I know for a fact that I seen a crazy stat line like 2-3 years ago where somebody dropped like 60.
Yep, you're close. You're getting there.
But I don't
you're
know.
You're getting there.
I don't
you
know,
don't know
her
name.
I
you don't know her
the
name.
Interview.
It's that is like, so unfortunate.
Lee?
Yeah.
Something Lee.
Yes, you are correct.
But I don't know her name. I don't, like, if like, honest, I don't know her name.
But like, I don't know. Cause should I give that to him? He's giving me the thumbs up. So I think I can give it to him. I mean, that was like that. Honestly, that was pretty impressive.
No, I know I seen that one before. Like, you know, like I used to see like some of the crazy like stat lines on ESPN.
Yeah.
I knew I seen someone drop 60. Was it? It was like 59, 60, something like that.
So yeah. So she. I'm pretty sure. I could be wrong. Let me actually let me look up, I'm trying to like, I'm cueing my own music. So it was actually Ayoka Lee.
Ayoka, yeah.
So she scored 61 points.
Oh my God.
Yes, 61 points against, I think it was, so she played for K-State.
Right,
it was
yeah,
61
yeah.
against Oklahoma.
Yeah, because they only dropped, like, I don't remember the final score, but I know Oklahoma only had like 70 points or something like that. Like, I mean, like, she killed them.
So it was crazy. And I think one of these games, I wish I would have put in what the final score was because she scored. It was a win. So they did win the game at least.
Right.
I think I can't remember who it was, but somebody scored a bunch of points and they lost. And I was like, that must have been for nothing.
Yeah, I couldn't even tell you who was second on that list.
So actually, that one I think is what most people get. So this was recent. So Ayoka Lee scored 61 against K-State.
Right.
With she was on K-State.
Right.
Against Oklahoma, 2022.
Right.
Lori Bauman is second. She had the record until 2022.
Okay.
She scored 50 against Drake.
Ooh, wow.
She played for Drake.
Okay.
And she scored that against Maryland.
Wow, okay. Oh, and I guess the Big Ten team as well. Okay.
And that was in 1982.
Oh, my God.
And that was also in the NCAA tournament. So that is also the most points that anyone has scored in the tournament.
Wow. Wait, I'm sorry. K-State, Kaylin dropped 49. This was 50, and then she just. What year did Ayoka drop?
61, 2022.
Oh my God! So yeah, that was like,
so that was like
two years ago. Oh my God, that's insane, dude. That's crazy,
isn't it? And like, imagine 61 points. Like Paige Beckers, who's like insane,
right.
Scored 61, but in two games, it took her two games to do.
Yeah, no, that's
insane.
Because that's what I thought I seen. I knew for a fact that I seen some, like, you should know ESPN, they've been getting a little more creative with some of their posts too now. Like, something about, like, she almost dropped the whole team off by herself. And I'm like, oh my God, dude. Like, it seemed fake. You see some crazy stat lines in women's basketball too,
sometimes,
man. Some crazy stat lines.
Yeah, that's crazy. Like, that's like, I mean, yeah, like the whole team, the other team probably didn't even have to come.
Yeah, like, I mean, like, what's the point? Like, what's the point?
Yeah, so anyway, so thank you, Deshaun, for coming on to the podcast. And thank you, everyone else. We got Hannah Holy Cross coming up next to talk more about Caitlin Clark. Hey, Hannah. So it's so good to have you on. Just for people who are, you know, new here and wondering who you are. You work at the State News and do a lot of fantastic reporting about the, which desk are you on?
So I'm on the regional desk the breaking news and public safety reporter.
Right. And so we are bringing you on for none of that, like absolutely none of that. So you were on the 1909 last week and you did an incredible feature story about this sophomore who created this app and like was tracking the MSU parking police, basically. Yeah. And that was a great story. Then you were on House Lights to discuss the royal family.
Yeah.
And Hannah, you are Hannah. Liz said something along the lines of, like, you're on a podcast roll. Yes. And so what's next? Sports Roundtable is next. So we are committing to the bit. We are putting you on. And you said that I guess let me ask you, what's the one thing you know about sports?
Yeah, so when Liz said that, I was like, that would be hilarious because I only know one thing about sports, which is that Caitlin Clark's setting records.
Right, and she is,
Yeah.
So I guess I want to start, just to give viewers a little bit of context, as far as, like, your interest level in sports. Did you ever play sports as a kid? What, where are you coming from?
Yeah, so I've never really been athletically inclined growing up. I did play tennis in high school. Was I good?
Like, for the high school team, though?
Yes, for the high school team.
But, like, that's more than me. Because, like, I'm somebody that does, like, actively involved. I'm the host of a sports podcast, and I tried out for the baseball team, didn't even make the cut for the freshman team, and just stopped playing.
Yeah, I mean, I was on the varsity team by default, just because I was an upperclassman, and there wasn't really a lot of upperclassmen, so I just kind of got thrown on there. But growing up, I never really watched any sports besides football. Because I grew up watching football because my parents and my whole family are huge MSU fans, and I would tailgate, and we were such big fans. We fly to bowl games.
Big fans.
Yeah, I went to the Rose Bowl, the Cotton Bowl, the Peach Bowl, but this was all when I was really young, and I was kind of just there for the vibes.
Perfect.
I don't think I really got the gist of football until college when I started going to the games with my friends and they kind of explained it to me. Same thing with basketball. I never really understood basketball really until I got to college and one of my best friends, she's a huge basketball fan. She has season tickets and she kind of explained it to me. So I don't really keep up with sports that often besides football. So that's like when, like, it was like, oh, you should go on Sports Roundtable, I just thought it was so funny.
So, yeah, and it's crazy. And, like, and I love that you're here to discuss this because we got a big topic on the table today.
Yes.
And it is Caitlin Clark, none other than Caitlin Clark. She has been, in a word, insane. Like, so I guess, like, the context that a lot of people put – or the lens that they view Caitlin Clark through is that she is a lot like Steph Curry, who is an NBA player and is known for how good of a shooter he is, right? So, like, which is something that's kind of been, like, with sports in general, basketball. Players have gotten better at shooting as time goes on, and they've realized that if you shoot more three-pointers, you have a higher chance of winning because if you can improve your three-point accuracy, three points is more than two, right? Mm-hmm. We would agree on that,
yeah,
right? So that there's a more probability of you scoring more points if you just you shoot more threes more often and you get better at shooting them.
Yeah.
So anyway, I guess, like, from your perspective and, I guess, you know, what have you been hearing about Caitlin Clark?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I want to know, is she getting you interested in, you know, whether it's women's basketball or just basketball in general?
Yeah, because I feel like I kind of have that outsider perspective just because I don't really keep up with sports that often. The thing I like about Caitlin Clark and what she's doing for women's basketball is, like, a few years ago, if you were to ask me, like, okay, name three basketball players, I would probably say, like, LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan, all men. But then if you're like, oh, like, name three actors, oh, well, like, Meryl Streep, Leonardo DiCaprio. Like, it's more like...
We could go on. It's more diverse.
It's more diverse. So the thing I like about Caitlin Clark is she's kind of making that name for herself. And, you know, I get news headlines on... I get notifications. And so I always get, like, sports notifications. And I feel like half the sports notifications I've been getting have been about Caitlin Clark. And she's kind of putting that name out there and... Not just being like, look at me, but like, look at us. Like, bringing that attention to women's college basketball and eventually the WNBA.
Yeah, and that's I mean, it is, it's going to be crazy for the NBA or the WNBA. I'm really excited to see how the WNBA gets affected because I think that there are, and I'm not going to make a case for one way or the other, but there are people that have argued that the WNBA, some of their decisions that they've made haven't necessarily been the best to market the WNBA or, you know, do certain things for the WNBA. So I guess, like, it's a tricky situation that the WNBA has always been put in because, like, sometimes, I mean, I was watching a couple of games before and they were like, I heard about them and they were like on Facebook video. I'm like, what are we doing at the, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not an expert. I'm not going to pretend to be one, but I'm just like, it seems a little, I don't know that I would broadcast on Facebook video, you know, for like, if I'm a major sports league. Right. So, that was weird. And it was like an exclusive on Facebook video. So, so I guess, like, I think that Caitlin Clark can have a real impact and get real people to watch this this league that historically has struggled to attract a viewership. And I think a lot of it does have to do with, like, media investment. You know, there are a number of reasons. I'm not going to say that, you know, Caitlin Clark is the only reason that the WNBA is going to be saved.
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting. And I think and I guess, yeah, like, what else, like, do you know any other college basketball players?
Yeah, so the first time I ever became aware of who Caitlin Clark was I was on TikTok, and people were talking about Iowa's matchup against Louisiana and Angel Reese. And they were talking about kind of, I don't know if it was, like, beef, but I think it was Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark were kind of, like, taunting each other on the court. People on TikTok were kind of commenting on it and being like, that's immature behavior, blah, 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 blah. But then people were like, men do that to each other all the time on the court in men's basketball. But because it's, like, two girls who are very passionate about the sport, it's, like, bratty and bad behavior. It was very, like, odd. So I actually became aware of those two names at the same time. And then people were kind of trying to pit them against each other. And I think both of them came out and were like, look, like, we're both two women passionate about the game who are at the top of the league. And so I feel like also Angel Reese has kind of thrown her name out there, too, as well, to kind of bring that attention to.
And what do you think that, like, I know that you said that you didn't grow up the biggest sports fan, and you've kind of gotten into it to a little bit of a degree, but does part of it, like I'm obviously, you know, I identify as a man, like, born man, right? So I guess, like, I don't have the experience of, like, not seeing representation of white males on the court, so, like... Whereas, you know, with women, I feel like it's much harder. There's also a lot of men that sort of gatekeep sports to a certain degree. And so do you think that you would, or just women in general would feel more, comfortable getting into sports, or not necessarily comfortable, maybe that's not the right word, but more enthusiastic about it if women's sports were treated with the same gravity that men's sports are?
Well, like, growing up, you know, you kind of learn about the wage gap between men and women, especially in sports. Men's sports bring in so much money, and it's always been like there's not really much people could do about it because more people do attend their games do get more viewership, so it's just natural that they would be making as much more money as they do than women's athlete players. And I think that the more attention being brought to women's sports, more specifically women's basketball, opens up the opportunity for more women to view athletics as a career. Mm. I feel like a lot of women who are very good at their sport don't think they can make it very far because they won't make as much money as, say, like a male soccer player would make over a female player. So I feel like kind of bringing this attention, and, you know, my roommate, she's a cheerleader here at MSU, and so she cheers both men's and women's sports. And she's like a big reason why I've kind of gotten more into athletics, because she always talks about the women's basketball team. She loves to cheer their games, and she cheered their tournament last year. This year she cheered the men's tournament, but she told me, and this might need to be fact checked, but that the women's NCAA tickets cost more than the men's this year.
That's crazy.
Which, if that's true, that's huge improvement.
That's wild.
Yeah.
And like, I guess, like that is crazy. I think a lot of it like does have to do, because I like that you brought up the point about like if you're a girl and you're growing up and you are interested in, if you're playing a sport, right? Yeah. It's much harder to want to take something not I don't want to say like you would be taking it unseriously. Yeah. But like, it's hard to have that motivation when there might not be a league that you would find yourself in. And I mean, hockey's having a moment right now with the PWHL. Mm-hmm. And because there were like two leagues, but they weren't really that big. And they were kind of like in protest of each other. They were both battling at odds. And now they both combined and merged, which is something that nobody thought was going to happen. And now they are one big professional women's hockey league, which is very good for just the sport of hockey in general. And people in Michigan are upset because there's not a Detroit team. And there's also no college women's team at all. So that's an issue, too, because Michigan exports a lot of, from the men's and the women's side, they export a lot of good hockey players. But if you're a woman growing up in Michigan, you can't go to school here and play hockey. You have to leave the state, and that's a big deal breaker for a lot of people. Yeah. I was hearing some people who used to play college hockey, some at the University of Minnesota Duluth and some at other universities, who said that they played with a lot of the people in the PWHL, and it pursued a, like, what you would call a real degree, because they knew that the space in the professional women's just in the sport is so limited, right? So that is interesting. And I guess kind of just to leave it off, do you think what do you think you'll find yourself like watching the WNBA? Or though it's hard because it's like, how do you root for someone? Like, I rooted for Nia Claudin, you know, when like, I think she's on LA's team now, but she graduated from MSU. Right. Mm-hmm. And she was a couple years ago or a year ago or something like that. And so I rooted for her when she was in the WNBA. Mm-hmm. And but other than that, like, Detroit doesn't have a team. So so that's hard.
Yeah. I feel like, because even men and women's basketball, I kind of watch from a distance, kind of just see what people post on their stories, who won, stuff like that. So as someone who doesn't typically watch sports, I think I'll still probably watch from a distance. But I feel like I am very intrigued by Caitlin Clark, and I feel like she is drawing more women into viewing the sport who typically wouldn't. So I could see myself watching a game just to see the history she's making. Because I typically – I watched the most recent basketball game because I wanted to see my roommate on the court cheering.
Yeah.
So that kind of is what got me into it. But I did want to – bring up kind of like how I was talking about Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese and the criticism they were facing earlier. I saw a tweet actually yesterday that was a picture of a Stanford women's basketball player. She had like this long blonde hair and was like tall. And this guy tweeted the picture and was like, if Caitlin Clark looked like this, maybe I would watch her play. And someone quote tweeted it, because luckily I typically don't get hateful stuff like that on my feed, but the quote tweet is what came up on my feed, which was someone being like, you know, you could be as prominent of a player as Caitlin Clark and set the record she set, and you'll still face that discrimination, it's still, you can never win.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a crazy thing to see, is that even though she has made all these steps, there's still that
pushback and that. And
yeah.
That's really tough.
So I'm hoping that as she goes through her career, and like same thing with Angel Reese, people have been, a few months ago on TikTok, I kept seeing people talking about her grades, that she didn't have good enough grades and didn't go to class enough. I'm like, when have we ever discussed a male basketball player's grades?
That's crazy. Because, like, it's like, because, I mean, anybody that goes to MSU for football or basketball would not get into the school on merit. Like, there's no way.
U of M, too.
Right. Like, well, especially U of M.
Especially U of M.
But, like, most of the Big Ten schools... Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure I wouldn't be surprised if it's all the Big Ten schools. Like, any, if you're a really good basketball player and you're here on scholarship, there is no way that you would make it here on merit. Mm-hmm. I just don't believe it for a second.
Yeah. So, like, I wonder, as these female players make more of a name for themselves and become more prominent, if that kind of sexism will be more brought to light and people will kind of realize how ridiculous it is. Because, like, that hateful tweet, there were so many replies that were like, what are you talking about? Why does that matter? And so I'm kind of hoping with them making these records and making these names for themselves that people will kind of realize how ridiculous it is to hold women to this constant standard.
Yeah, you do see that, though, with a lot of other things. I mean, once, like, people have always hated gay people. But once more and more people started to, like, you know, once it became more socially acceptable, I think that you started to see people who are very hateful come out of the woods, like, more, you know, than they would otherwise. Mm-hmm. And I think that just goes for really any sort of anything. There's always those people who think or feel a certain way, but they don't really, like, it's not necessarily as public, you know, like, they don't have a big sign on their face that says, like, I hate women or something, you know, so, you know what I mean? So, yeah, it is interesting. And Caitlin Clark's, what she's done, it's crazy, though, too, because it took me a second to grow on Caitlin Clark, because when she, I was so mad, but I couldn't be, because, like, she's Caitlin Clark. I was so mad when she... scored on the last minute, like, last second of the game against Michigan State to beat them. Like, Michigan State almost beat Iowa, and, like, with Caitlin Clark.
And that's, like, crazy. Another thing, too. Imagine all the people that tuned in to watch that matchup and saw the fight MSU put up against her.
Yeah.
That brings awareness to MSU women's basketball team. So,
which is doing much better than it has been in recent years.
They've been doing
crazy.
Great. And their new coach from last year, too.
Right. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Robin Fralick. Love her. Doing a great job, obviously. So anyway, I guess really thank you for coming on and discussing Caitlin Clark with us. I hope you enjoy Caitlin Clark from afar as she continues to be historic.
Yes.
And thank you guys for joining the Sports Roundtable podcast for today. I will see you guys in the next one.